Hi, everybody. I'm Meg Kreplin.
And I'm Kate Vaisigo.
And we're going to do a dance. No. So what questions do you have? You've heard a ton of information from all different perspectives. What didn't we get to that you'd like to know? What didn't you get to that you'd like to know?
I have two questions. First of all, I have to congratulate you all and tell you that I live here in San Diego and come from the primitive state of California. The governor vetoed our single payer system bill, which was passed twice by the state legislature. My first question is, I think it's Commonwealth choice where the people above the poverty level buy into a system. Are there co-payments and deductibles onerous, and how do they respond to those financial responsibilities?
Commonwealth choice looks a lot like anybody else's private insurance, much more so than Commonwealth care, in my opinion. And I have not heard very many complaints about its structure, except from the people, except that it's unaffordable still. But in terms of the co-pays and who you can get to see and all of that, it very much mimics, it is the private insurers. So for many people, it's still too expensive, even though it's less expensive than it used to be.
So, again, I have patients that have health insurance, but, you know, like their Medicare or their donut hole, they can't afford their drugs. And I have other people that can't afford their copay for an MRI. So they're fully insured with a standard policy, but they don't get the health care they need. Is that an experience in Commonwealth choice?
Certainly. I mean, especially for the people who are just at the line at 300%. If you make $2 more than the 300% line, you have to pay for private insurance. You don't get any help from the state. And so especially for those people, I would say so. Although, I mean...
Right. One of the other great things about the state of Massachusetts is, the other presenters mentioned, is there are a lot of other options to fill in the gaps for folks that do have private insurance and fall into certain income categories that they can't afford copays, deductibles. We do have the health safety net, which can help to pay actual private health insurance copays and deductibles for folks. But just as throughout the rest of the nation, there are a lot of folks that still fall over the income limits for those programs and can't afford their copays and deductibles.
To switch focus, is concerned. What's your feeling about the response of the insurance companies that are participating in this? What's their attitude toward the program and their fiscal experience?
I think it depends on the insurance company. I think some insurance companies are doing okay. I think others, especially those who are serving some of the Commonwealth care population, are really looking at whether or not they can afford to continue to do this. And it'll be interesting because we're in the middle of a re-procurement for both MassHealth and for our Commonwealth care programs. And we don't know who's going to come in and we don't know who's going to be selected. But there are, I don't have the financials in my head, but yeah, some of the plans that were the cheapest plans out of the gate now are much more expensive, and some that were much more expensive are now the cheapest. And it's only been 2 years, so it hasn't completely worked out. But yeah, I think depending on where you stand, it's been very hard for some of our plans to make ends meet at the rates that they're being paid.
Yes?
Any sense of how this is impacting the community health centers, either in terms of demand for services or in terms of their financial situation?
Well, I can speak to community health centers, what I hear through patients who can't. Now there are, all these new insured folks and waiting months to get an appointment for a physical or even a doctor's appointment. A lot of community health centers have capped their enrollment to new patients. So in an emergency situation, they may be required to see the patient, but outside of that, getting regular preventive care, are unable to seek a doctor's visit.
Has that actually gotten worse since the implementation?
Yes.
That's one of the issues. It is a
My answer would be conjecture. I can say that some of the things we have in place, some of the HIV programming has not been affected by Commonwealth Care. There's still separate funding for HIV programs in Massachusetts. And the pharmacy assistant plan continues. So I'm not aware, I have not heard from the community that serves people living with HIV that this has interfered.
Health reform actually lifted the cap on the HIV program, which was up to 200% of the federal poverty level for folks. So
on ADAP?
ADAP hasn't, I mean, I do know ADAP, and ADAP hasn't, they thought there was going to be trouble, and they haven't run into it, to my knowledge. They were afraid that there was a lot of fears when this started that weren't realized, and that was among them, yeah.
Yes? I guess I can also comment on the exemptions form. It was a perfect example of the ways that the connector and the advocacy community really collaborated in order to help the member who's going through the exemptions process. And we basically brought the members' concerns. These forms were really complicated, and a lot of folks were getting stuck in the system. And we spoke with the connector about that, and we really worked, and they listened to our concerns, and we really worked, I think, to make the process better. Not the best it could be, but we're working towards that.
We have somebody all the way in the back.
All the way in the back, ma'am?
This is a wonderful presentation. The tax material is something I've never heard of. Zero. I can go through the opposite questions. One is, did you find an unexpected second cost shift anywhere, if so where? And the other was, I'm from Maine. Our approach really built on figuring out what happened to healthcare, trying to monetize cost savings. Have you seen anything like that, like shifts in ambulatory sensitive conditions?
Lindsay, would you like to answer that?
Yeah.
No,
thank you.
I don't even think that I'm the best person to answer this question. We have not seen cost shifting per se. We've seen higher costs in certain places. In particular, like I mentioned before, the number of uninsured was greater, so we've had more people more quickly into the connector. We thought that it would be really a 3-year amount of time to get us up to the place where we were just already 6 months ago. So more state dollars coming in, but not unexpectedly so. And then, tell me the second part of your question again. I was really hoping somebody else would answer.
I would say it's almost too soon to tell. I mean, one of the goals of healthcare reform is cost shifting.
Yeah.
They want a cost shift from free care pool to other sources. But I don't think we know yet exactly.
You also want true savings.
People do want true savings, yes. I mean, I don't care. I want people to be healthy, but yeah. That's true. We had hoped that there would be less emergency room use through all of these programs, but because there are no doctors or very few doctors, more people are going to the emergency room because they can't get to see their doctor. And that is, I think, an unintended consequence of healthcare reform, but also just really speaks to how bad it's getting.
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
So another frame for the continued high use of emergency rooms is not necessarily that there aren't docs out there, which is certainly a problem, but also that a number of these folks are coming from the health safety net where their culture of getting care is going to the emergency room, and so it will take time to shift. A lot of these folks have primary care providers, they just aren't yet used to seeing them. And so there was a huge piece in the paper a couple weeks ago that talked about the high number of ER visits, and it was comparing our low-income population to the nation in ER use, and I don't think that's a fair comparison. I think we should be comparing our low-income folks to the nation's low-income folks, and Anne wants to dive in on that one.
Just a little addition. I was talking about our Living Together Enrollment Program earlier. One of the things that outreach workers can do that is really effective is to explain to folks that they're getting moved, particularly folks who have been uninsured and using the health safety net, exactly what to expect. Show them pictures of the envelopes. Tell them how to use managed care and explain to them more than once what's going to happen so that they don't make those mistakes.
I could just add on
one last point. The goal now is retention and post-enrollment. So we've done pretty good at getting people enrolled, but we have a really good job ahead about how do you use health insurance. It's not easy for any of us. I have a daughter who's now 19, and I realized one day, she really has no idea how she gets health care. People do not understand it's complicated.
And because I want to dive in too. Indeed, talking with the community health workers, the outreach workers who are busy, their grant is to do outreach and enrollment, but what everybody's really concerned with is helping people who have now gained health insurance to actually retain that health insurance. Is that when they're moving and the mailing doesn't get to their address, they might get dropped off, et cetera. Help them actually retain it and help them use it. And that's, I think, the key issue for Massachusetts going forward and why we need very much to keep funding community groups, outreach groups, community health workers to be working with especially the low-income, newly insured population.
Thank you. Ma'am?
So what are you doing in terms of the difficulty accessing primary care providers? Are you trying to recruit new providers to Massachusetts or just redistribute or what are you doing?
She said Chapter 305, but I don't know what my answer has a title, so here you go.
The cost and quality bill that was passed over the summer has a number of primary care incentives in there, and Teresa probably knows them actually much better than I do. We're trying to take, so our UMAC system has a much higher percentage of med students going into primary care than our private universities, and so giving UMass more money to take more folks, hopefully because then more of them will go into primary care. Also creating incentives like loan reimbursement and low-income housing for doctors who want to stay and do a certain number of years in primary care. And we have already seen, I don't know when the first year was, last year, when community health centers were given grant money to hire primary care doctors and then help them reimburse with their loan repayments. And so we've already seen some shifting, but I think it'll be a good 8 years just because the time to become a doctor takes so long before we'll really see that in the workforce. Is that fair, Teresa?
Yeah, the class has just been increased at the medical school.
Our medical school is for state residents, so it's a very important program. State residents that come in and then stay and work in Massachusetts. My understanding is the class has just been increased to 124 students, which is great, but as you said, it's going to take time.
We've got two questions in the back.
Hi, nice presentation. It's interesting talking about this here because I would say I'm a child of universal health care in another country. And it's so interesting to see when I'm here and I have health insurance, all the things I have to go through to get here. Whereas when I go back to my other country, I just go down and I want to go to the doctor and I go, and I want to go to the hospital and I go, and I don't think about my bill. But I just have two questions for Lindsay. One is,
I'm going to give Meg a go just because I got through the presentation, and then if there's pieces, I'm happy to pick them up. I mean, we've been talking about what's going to happen. We have these things called 9C cuts, and 9C cuts are the governor's way of cutting back the budget in an emergency fashion. And so you heard a little bit about it. I mean, there were no cuts to eligibility, and there were no caps put on any of our programs, which is really, really good news, and very different from the last time around.
Yeah, with Romney.
On the other hand, what was cut were provider rates. So the increases that were supposed to make a lot of these things happen for health centers and for doctors, I mean, a lot of those places, things, so they weren't cut all the way back, but the increases that were promised are not coming through. When I sound so glib about how few doctors there are, I'm from the western part of the state where there are far fewer doctors, and so it's an even greater problem. And so I think one of the things we're going to see through this is that there's a real commitment in the state to keeping the people who are most vulnerable covered and help them continue in access. I mean, the outreach and enrollment programs that we've all talked about were level funded, which is amazing. I mean, it would have been easy to cut them. We're a vulnerable population. The people who do the work are a vulnerable population. I mean, but it stuck around. So there's clear commitment. But it'll be interesting to see how it really works out with all of the provider reimbursement cuts, because if the providers aren't paid, they can't do the work, and or they have to change how they do their work. So.
And then the second piece about what we're doing nationally, we have such a Massachusetts bubble around most of us that there's not a ton of work we're doing federally. Our former executive director at Healthcare for All, his name is John McDonough, and he's now working with Senator Kennedy, and he very much is taking in part the vision of Massachusetts and trying to see where it can go on a national level. And an anecdote about John is that he went to Washington with no he's a fairly arrogant guy and really known as anyone, but really tried to go into his new job with a humble hat on and trying to say, I don't know that Massachusetts is going to work for the rest of the country. Let's see what other people want to do. And he's heard over and over from folks around a number of stakeholders, both within Congress and outside of it, because they've included a lot of other stakeholders, business groups and hospitals and doctors and advocates, that people are really interested in what we've been able to accomplish in Massachusetts. And I think that's why, and there's been some really good press lately about what Kennedy's trying to do. So I think the best that we can all do collectively on the state level is just make sure that it works, because if Massachusetts doesn't work, then it is no longer an appropriate model. And so we're all trying our hardest and spending all of our time on the state level just to make sure that as many folks are getting covered and there's as much money as possible and we have as many success stories as possible, and just try and get that out to the country and present it in certainly the glass is half full as opposed to half empty, because I think the more that we're able to do that on a state level, the more chances there are nationally, with my humble hat on.
Good. Thank you. Behind you, yes, this gentleman in the brown and then the gentleman in the blue. I think it's brown. Are you wearing brown? Are you brown? Yes, you. You.
I've heard a couple of people say that there aren't enough positions, and I'm curious about that, because my impression is that in the United States, and I would certainly think in Massachusetts, we've got way more positions per population than most other countries do, but that we've got a horrible maldistribution from specialty care.
Yeah.
They're all in specialty care as opposed to primary care. The more we move into universal health care access or insurance, at least, the more you need primary care. So I'm just curious if I'm mistaken or whether that is in fact the issue.
I think you're right.
Yeah, we all agree. Yeah.
Yes.
Two questions. One, does Massachusetts partner with any private insurance companies to provide the insurance mechanisms that you need? And the other thing is, has Massachusetts started thinking about long-term coverage? Mm-hmm.
Do you want to handle the first one?
No, thank you.
When you mean mechanisms, do you mean like outside organizations?
Do you have any insurance companies that are actually sort of providing coverage for you?
Yes.
It is
private insurance.
Yeah. So you wanna?
Sure. So I can speak a little bit about Commonwealth Choice. Is just like a private. It's choosing private health insurance through this connector body, which allows folks to compare the plans side by side and all of their benefits, deductibles. So it's just like the private insurance market.
Just it is, but with a special stamp.
Right. So. The connector gives those plans the minimal credible coverage stamp and says that these meet guidelines and are approved by the state's agency, the connector.
Commonwealth care plans, though, are in fact private insurers that work very closely with the state and are fairly, by, I don't know all the properties you're referring to, but on the Commonwealth care side, we have Medicaid MCOs, they're called. So. Yes, they do. And that's what we're in the middle of.
Repeat what they do for the recording.
Do they bid? Is there a competitive bidding process to get into this? And the four that were chosen for the first time around was not competitive. They were chosen because of their history in the state. Now it's open for competitive bidding, and we don't know what it's going to look like. Oh, gosh. Yes,
I think one of the things that distinguishes Massachusetts from other states is the power and the history and the cost of our hospital sector. And I just wonder how they're playing. Have we been able to make progress on getting down? It used to be two more days longer length of stay than the national average, 20 or 30% higher per capita cost per admission. Is that still true, or have we been able to notice that?
I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah, to Lindsay, if anybody.
It's also a quality and cost council.
Well, yeah, I don't know the answer to your question. I know that there are a lot of statutes and things in place to work on that problem, and there's a whole council devoted to figuring it out, but whether or not there's actually any hard numbers, I don't have the answer. I mean, what I can say is that I'm hoping that things change so that many of the people who are not currently allowed on our Medicaid rolls or our Commonwealth care rolls, the undocumented immigrants, will be allowed to be covered. I don't know, but that's a federal change. That's not a state change. As far as the state's concerned, it seems to me there's a high level of commitment to keeping that pool as big and as available as possible. And there's certainly a strong coalition of people who are committed to making that happen. And it's not perfect. It's not a perfect solution. And it's still dicey to get care if you're in that situation. I don't think it's going to be cut. It's going to be completely eliminated. I think it may be reduced. But there's no will to just get rid of it that I'm aware of. Right, I mean, there very well could be, I mean, those are the Medicaid rates that are being cut, and the reimbursement rates, not technically the health safety net, but you're right, if they're not making the kinds of money they need to make, you don't know what's going to happen, you're right. And I think this is the last question.
I think we're going to wrap up, and please come on up and ask us questions. I'd like to thank you very much for attending this last session, and I'd also like to make a plea for the Community Health Workers SPIG Special Interest Group. It's community health workers, outreach workers, that are key, frankly, to Massachusetts enrollment in health insurance of low-income people. The SPIG also needs your enrollment. The SPIG has to get above 170 members again this year in order to become an actual full-fledged section. If it doesn't, it will lose its SPIG status entirely. As of this year, all APHA members can have primary and several secondary memberships, and as a member of the Community Health Workers SPIG, I ask you, a number of us in this room ask you, would you please be willing to go onto the computers here at APHA and add the Community Health Workers SPIG to your groups that you're affiliated with here at APHA. Community health workers themselves get paid so crappily that they can rarely make it here, and our numbers go up and down, and we need your help. Thank you very much for coming and for everything.
There we go. This was great. This was very good.
this was a huge turnout for this time.
Oh, look what she got. Oh, yeah. Jeez, it's not a cross. All the touristy stuff that I've been doing, it's all crosses, which I certainly didn't want. Oh, really?
This was really good. This was really good. This is one of the solidest input things. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'd have been crammed. We'd have been packed. No, this was a really good turnout. And with John, the arrogant John McDonald.
So, you know, but all of those interesting
yeah.
Just brought out the
It's incredibly complicated, and it's overall working. Yeah.
I love the way you said it.
Thank you. Thank you very much on that.